Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Today on the show, one of my favorite shows of the year, Emory Hunt of the Football Game Plan Draft Guide and CBS Sports is going to join me to talk, what else? Draft. And we're going to dive into some really cool stuff, including, of course, a couple of positions of need for the Seahawks, some of his favorite prospects that might fit on that interior offensive line and linebacker. But the other reason that I like having Emory on the show is he's different. He takes a different approach than other draft guide publishers and other scouts. He goes deeper. He casts a wider net. He goes to a lot more schools and a lot more all-star games. He's a lot more open-minded. We'll talk about his quarterback rankings as an example of that. You might be surprised with how he has guys ordered and a surprise name on that list that might be of interest to the Seahawks later in this draft. Let's get into it. Emory Hunt talking draft today on Seahawks Forever.
Welcome to the Seahawks Forever podcast, in-depth analysis on everything Seahawks. And now, here's your host, Dan Vians.
Happy April, everybody, or as I like to call it, NFL Draft Month. No April Fool's jokes today. Hopefully you'll navigate that as safely as you can today. Thought about, tossed around a couple ideas, thought better of it, because this is a big month. We are now in April, one of the most impactful, interesting, and mysterious drafts for the Seattle Seahawks in at least 15 years with the new regime in place. And we're going to talk about some of that today. If you haven't caught up on the last couple of episodes, definitely check in on that conversation I had with Brandon Kane of Hawk's Nest a couple of days ago. We go deep in the draft as well. He studies the draft as hard as anyone out there who does what I do and what he and I do. He's about 250 prospects deep and has some strong feelings about some Seahawk fits. And then check out the Hawk Zone Rundown podcast. I made an appearance with those guys today. You'll find it in my Twitter feed. I'll put the link down below as well. That's a podcast. These guys are kind of new to the game and it's growing and they need more views and subscribers because they're doing some really fun stuff. So definitely check that out. In the meantime, hit the like button for this video and subscribe to this channel and hit the bell for notification of future episodes. You can subscribe on Spotify and get ad-free audio episodes for less than $1 a month. That link will be in the description, but you can subscribe on any audio platform you prefer, or you can just buy me a beer or a coffee, as many of you have at buymeacoffee.com. That link will be in the description as well. I appreciate all the support. Let's get right into this because you know how much I love the draft. And let's be honest, right? They say the first step towards solving a problem is admitting you have one. And I have a mock draft problem. And you'll see that tomorrow when Michael Thompson and I get together and do dueling mock drafts and a live between us. It's just the beginning as we are now in that official month. So, but for today anyway, let's let Emory do the talking. Here's my conversation with him earlier today. Honored to be joined again by Emory Hunt from CBS Sports and publisher of the Football Game Plan Scouting Report. Emory, how many miles do you have on you so far this year?
A bunch, man. You know, I call games. I attend games as a scout, you know, in terms of like going on and watching prospects that I'm not calling. And then I do in-studio work for CBS Sports. So, you know, it's a lot, man. I'm up and down the Eastern Seaboard for sure.
One of the things I love about you is how deep you go. When you look at your draft guide, you focus on a lot more small school guys than some of the other draft guides that I see out there. Prospects I've never heard of and that I think the general public and viewers of the show have never heard of. Is that what, at some point you had to make the decision that you were going to go farther than others do? What went into that decision for you?
It dates back to, you know, me as a former college athlete, right? And knowing that there were other talented players that didn't play in the SEC, didn't play at Florida State or whatnot. And, you know, just knowing that, hey, guys I play with, on my team that ended up going and playing in the CFL or playing in the Arena League when it was, you know, a big deal at the time. I knew those dudes were super talented. So if I had the opportunity to create a draft guide, I want to make sure I cast a wide net. I mean, think about it. Last year, John Hall out of Northwood signs with Seattle. I had a scout report on him. How I knew about John Hall from Northwood? Yeah. Because I was the MC of the GLIAC Media Day, and they were in the MEAC, the GLIAC, and I interviewed, the head coaches for each team. So obviously I'm keeping tabs on what those teams are doing throughout the season. I'm like, this dude got talent. He's tall, he's long, he's athletic. And so why wouldn't I put those guys in the guide? And the other thing was, it shows you that, because otherwise I go to all of these All-Star games, right? Mm-hmm. I don't just go to the Senior Bowl and then the Combine. You know, I'm at the FCS Bowl, which starts in December. Then I go to the College Gridiron Showcase, the Hula Bowl, Tropical Bowl, the, at the time, NFLPA Bowl, and now the East-West Shrine Bowl, then Senior HBCU Legacy Bowl, like that, right? So I go to all of them. And if I'm going to be there, why wouldn't I have a scout report on 90% of the guys that are there? Otherwise, I'm wasting my time going to these different All-Star games to not have any work for it, right?
Yeah.
So why not just put those guys in the guide? And it helps round out your scouting blade, so to speak, because by the time you start at the FCS Bowl, and by the time you get to the Senior Bowl, you've seen the athleticism and the skill set, the talent, and now you're able to say, oh, man, this dude I saw at the FCS Bowl, he could be here at the Senior Bowl. So now you already get a gauge on where his true athleticism and talent really lies. So it helps you become a more well-rounded scout, because anyone can go to the Senior Bowl and say, oh, that guy's talented. Like, no, really, no, duh. Like, he has an Ohio State helmet on. Of course he's talented. And he's at the Senior Bowl. He's not a sleeper if he's at the Senior Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, a lot of these guys, too, is some of these guys that we're talking about in the top half of the first round, guys like Jared Verse or guys later on, like Braden Fisk. I mean, they started out at small schools. And in this, you know, the transfer portal era, you know, I think fans maybe don't understand that some of these guys that they see coming out of Ohio State and Michigan, some of these big programs, come draft time at the end of the month, started out at small schools and elevated themselves. But I want to take this a little bit further, too, because I feel like there's more to it than that. You must have a more open mind and in some ways be able to allow yourself to be more objective than some of these other scouts that put out guides, because, man, I'm telling you, we were talking about it a little bit before we started today. All of the guides, for the most part, look nearly identical. Yours looks different. And so what is it about this industry that prevents some of those other guides from escaping the consensus and taking chances?
That's a fantastic question. And I feel like it really boils down to a lot of people are afraid to be wrong in public. And I've always said this, and this is my philosophy. I'd rather be wrong by myself than wrong in a group. Because if you're wrong in a group, that shows that no one's thinking. If you're out there wrong by yourself, at least, you took a shot. You saw what you said, what you saw. Didn't work out, and you moved on, and you got better, and you moved on, right? It happens. But I feel like a lot of folks are afraid to be wrong and or too afraid to admit that they're wrong and are not confident in their opinion to defend themselves if they have a take that's outside of the general consensus. And if you can't defend your take, how much work really went into that take? So if you're looking at a list and seeing that everyone has this guy number one, or you get married to a way too early mock draft in May and kind of, well, I got to keep this guy in the first round because everybody kind of has him in the first round. If you truly deep down don't believe that guy's a first round talent, then don't put him in the first round. And so if you don't have that self-confidence, that ability to really defend your point and hammer home why you feel like this guy is rated here or there, then that's why you see a lot of the lists, a lot of the guides, a lot of the analysis all be the same. So when you have an Emory Hunt comes in and says, hey man, Anthony Richardson is my QB1. And this was in July of, 2022, before he was a full-time starter at Florida. Yeah. Like, yo, who's this crazy dude that you're just saying that for clicks? You're just saying you don't believe that. And then after the first game of the season, everyone now wants him as a Heisman Trophy winner and he goes in the first round. So it's kind of like, dang. But no one comes back and says, you know what, Emory actually was on it early, because they'll slowly start to you know, mold their takes to include him in the first round or include, you know, they'll come around eventually, but they never really want to stand out there initially and take the brunt of the force of the barrage of the anger that comes with being an independent thinker.
Yeah, and it's funny that scouts and media are afraid to be wrong because these GMs are wrong all the time. I mean, there's a long track record of it. And there's examples of this philosophy of yours all throughout your draft guide. And, you know, nowhere is it probably more easy to identify than at the quarterback position because, you know, fans gravitate towards that position. And these names are known because they're the ones that are front and center, right? And just going through your top 11, actually, there's a reason I go to 11. One and two, you're Caleb and Jalen, or Jaden McDaniels, just like everybody else, pretty much, right? Some have May too, but you've got Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, one and two. Then it gets a little interesting. Your number three quarterback on this list, Spencer Rattler out of South Carolina. And then you go Jordan Travis, Florida State. Then Drake May, Michael Penix, who we've talked a lot about on the show recently, J.J. McCarthy. And so it's almost as if your rankings are just like everybody else, except Rattler and Travis snuck in there. What is it about those two guys that you really like?
And if you think about the Rattler, if you go back in, there's always a tweet. And if you go back to, this was January, before the Senior Bowl, I was on Ross Tucker's show, and I said, hey, Spencer Rattler is my QB3 in the draft, and expect him to go to the Senior Bowl and blow up. So that tweet goes out. And then everyone comments about me going being crazy or whatnot.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure.
Then he goes to the Senior Bowl MVP. Mm-hmm. And then next thing you know, everyone's like, well, hey, man, like Spencer, hey, he really can't. So I'm always saying if you're watching the tape truly, like you mentioned earlier, in an open-minded, unbiased way, you can see things a little bit clearer. And you allow those thoughts to kind of come in and be like, yeah, you know, I feel like this is a strong take. With Rattler, it was the fact that he played a lot of pro ball already. He has the highs, started out great as a freshman, you know, gets usurped by Caleb Williams and just goes through a lull the rest of the way at Oklahoma, transfers, didn't start out hot at South Carolina. The last six games of 2022, played really well, had the big upset win against Tennessee and had a big win against Clemson. And then he goes and has a good game against Notre Dame. And then he comes back. And because obviously I was like, hey, man, you better leave while your name is hot. You're on an upswing. He comes back to try to get more coaching and put more games like those last six on tape. And he does. But the team success isn't the same because the offensive line was in flux. And you saw him still fight through that. So you like to see him. You like that he went through the ups and downs and stayed true to the course. And I thought he outperformed Drake May in that opener this past season. They just didn't have the offensive line to get it done. And for Jordan Travis, I truly believe if Travis doesn't get injured and goes through the playoffs and goes through the postseason All-Star game circuit, we'll be talking about him as a first-round pick because the offense just moves with him under center. He is someone that you could literally point to and say, yo, he got better every single season to where his perception changed on how you looked at him. You was like, I don't know if this guy's probably playing the right position. Then, yeah, he's a good quarterback. And then, yo, they need him to win. And I feel like he was making those strides. He had made those strides. So that's why I'm not going to forget the years of tape that I watched on Travis and not talk about him. And that's why he's not outside of my top five.
Yeah, I keep hearing about him. He doesn't have a good enough arm to play in the NFL. And then you watch the tape and he just has NFL throws all over his tape. Just all over, you know, small windows. And tell me this then, because it seems like the blind spot that some of these other people have that do what you do is that once they make their mind up about someone, even if it's early in the process, there's almost nothing that can come along to change their mind. How hard is it to change your mind when the information changes, right? When the evidence in front of you changes and maybe you have a guy rated high and then you see something along the way during the process where you go, maybe I need to rethink that.
Yeah, you have to have that, man, because that's how you get Spencer Rattler being your QB3. Because prior to his South Carolina, run or the last six games of 2022, I was like, man, I can't believe folks were looking at Rattler and saying, I remember this vividly, how people used to look at Jalen Hurts' rookie season and say, man, just, you know, just throw him out there. And if they don't win this game, they always put these, you know, these ultimatums on certain quarterback prospects. If he doesn't win this game, then just you could take Spencer Rattler in the first round next year.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, how could you, what do people see about Spencer Rattler that says first round pick based off what we've seen in Oklahoma? Like, and so that's an example of me having an initial take and then changing my thought process based off just being open-minded and watching him play and watching him develop and knowing what he was. And you can't lie to yourself and say that what he put on tape at South Carolina, it's a lot better than what he put on tape at Oklahoma. And even when he got benched, it wasn't the fact that his numbers stunk. The numbers were okay, but the play was erratic. And that changed. And so when that changed, it was like, hey, man, he got better. He got better, and you got to give him his props.
And then I always like finding the sleeper, right? And you do that better than anybody. And so I'm looking at your top 11, and 10 of the 11 names, I think most of the viewers of this show would know and have probably brought up on their own in the comments at some point, hey, here's my guy, here's my guy. DJ Irons is someone that I want you to talk about for a second. Akron quarterback. Pretty good size, just a guy that I wasn't familiar with, but you have him rated ahead of Joe Milton, Michael Pratt, and Bo Nix, who's your 11th rated prospect. What is it about DJ Irons, the small school kid you like?
Well, first of all, let me, I'm not going to let people slide with calling the FBS program small school.
Okay.
Because that's the trick the national media has done. They have made that section of FBS programs. First, they called them Group of Five, but then they've made them now considered small schools because it's taken away the role of these analysts to do their jobs. And so now when they say small school, they just say FBS. Oh, yeah, it's small. Mm-hmm. Like, no. Mm-hmm. And that absolves them from going and finding the John Hall from Northwood because, man, I look at small school guys. I mean, I look at, Northwestern. Like, man, shut up, man. Like, so that's the, I'm not absolving. It's not you, yeah, but I'm talking to those guys.
I'm listening.
So I'm not absolving those guys, but it was funny with Irons, right? I was grading. It was a situation where I was grading. This was last season. I was grading a player from Ohio State on defense. And I'm like, I watched the Akron game. Cause I don't know why. Cause Akron's offense. I know Joe Moorhead, a big fan of how he runs offense. I know it puts a lot of defensive players and challenges. So I wanted to see them, you know, schematically, like no different than when I watch a defensive line prospect or a linebacker. Mm-hmm. And if they have a game against a triple option team, I'm going to watch that game to see how well they work their eyes, their hands, their feet, right?
Okay. Yeah.
How to stay disciplined. So I watch it. I'm like, this dude is like making some great throws, like outside the numbers, far hash throws, touch, velocity, and he can run. Like, why no one is talking about this dude? Hmm. Then you catch a live game when they do matching late in the season. I'm like, this dude actually got some skills. I'm like, I'm surprised because he has the NFL size. So you follow him this year, and he didn't participate in the All-Star game because he got banged up. He was supposed to be in a Hula Bowl,
okay,
or the Tropical Bowl, I believe. So because he had to nurse an injury, he didn't go. But great in his tape, and they did ran a two-quarterback system because him and Jeff Undercuffler, who was another small school guy because he went to Albany, transferred to Akron, and they were doing a two-quarterback system. But Irons actually can play. And he would be someone, if I was a UFL GM, would have targeted right away. Like, listen, man, bypass this NFL draft process. Come play spring ball for these three games before the NFL draft. Give these guys a fresh look at your game against pros. Let's see what happens at the end of the month, you know. So that's someone that would be a perfect spring league project to work with and play, because we know you don't get a chance at that position to really show your skill set and play outside of the preseason at the NFL level.
Yeah, and I know you cover the spring leagues and watch them closely. Well, now there's just the one, the United Football League, and they had their opening weekend this weekend. And that's an issue I've always had with the spring leagues. And I hope they get to that point. I really do. I hope they get to the point where they prioritize young quarterbacks who fell through the cracks and didn't make a roster in the NFL. Because I've been of the opinion for quite a while, and I think it was verified to me anyway over the weekend, that they've taken some steps in this direction, but as long as guys like Luis Perez continue to be trotted out there as your starting quarterbacks when you only have eight teams, they're doing it wrong. We got to develop these young quarterbacks, right?
Especially when Lindsey Scott is behind them. And we know Lindsey Scott is a superstar, and that's the type of guy that should be playing right now in the spring league.
And Holt Naylors is on that roster too, isn't he?
Exactly.
Yeah,
and so that's we saw Chase Garber.
We saw here and see it. Yeah.
Which is great, you know?
I thought he looked great yesterday. I was, you know, I watched him play a little bit at Cal, obviously, being a Wazoo guy, but I thought he was probably the best quarterback out there. And then seeing Matt Corral out there again, too, who had connections here to Seattle. There was reportedly a lot of interest that year, and Carroll liked him, and then he had some mental health issues he needed to take care of. Hopefully those are all behind him. But I thought, guys like that, guys like Garbers and Corral, I think are the guys we need to be seeing in that league.
They need reps, man.
Yeah, it was fun to watch him. Before we move off quarterbacks, I just wanted to ask you this because you've been putting out this guide now for 5 years. I think this is your fifth one, you said. So that means 2022, you were heavily into this. What was your grade on Sam Howell coming out of North Carolina, who the Seahawks just acquired a few weeks ago?
He was my 10th quarterback, and I probably was a little bit too low on him because there were three guys that I had in that everybody talked about in the beginning of the way too early mocks as the first round guys. He was a part of that. I had him third with the same grade of the Matt Corral and also Carson Strong. So I had Carson Strong 8, Matt Corral 9, and then Sam Howell 10, but all had a grade of 74, which is a, you know, decent starter, right? Hmm. But, you know, when you watch Matt Howell, you like the fact that he is an athlete. He does hold the ball a little bit too long. Kind of reminds me of what we've seen as a prospect from Bo Nix.
Okay.
They kind of play the same game. But Howell, you know, you wonder what happened in the drop off from 2021 to 2022 or 2020 to 2021. And that was the biggest concern for me. But, you know, he went out there, he started a full season with Washington. I thought that was good for him. We normally don't see that.
Yeah.
A guy drafted that late, get an opportunity to really just play through a season. And let the chips fall where they may. And I'm glad he got that opportunity because we got to see what it would look like. Sam Howell starting with a good stable of receivers. You know, they didn't really have the run game, but so they leaned into what Howell does as a runner and also him just throwing the football. So we got to see him play. And I kind of like that he's still getting that opportunity to really at least compete to be a QB2. You got starting experience. So we've seen what it looks like as a starter. We've seen you be able to win some games. So I think that's a good pickup for Seattle.
Let's talk about a couple of other positions of need that seem to be the biggest focus this offseason for the Seahawks and thus their fans. And the first one is the offensive line. You know, I think we all agree that they've got some nice pieces on defense. They did some heavy lifting there, bringing back Leonard Williams and signing some other free agents on short-term deals. But that offensive line still has a lot of question marks, especially on the interior. It sounds like the tackles are going to be set. Charles Cross will be in year 3. Abe Lucas, John Schneider says that knee procedure, they're optimistic about it. He should be ready to go week 1. So assuming that those guys are in place, and then they go out and sign George Fant as a swing guy that can just give you a little insurance. Year 2 for Olu Oluwatimi and Anthony Bradford, we expect them to be in the mix. But offensive line is clearly a need going into this draft. And John Schneider made some comments a couple of weeks ago that I think people have taken and run with, and they misunderstood them about how guards are often overdrafted and overpaid. It's a need, and I still expect them to go guard early, if not in the first round, if they were to use their first-round pick. And right now they sit at 16. Who's a guy, given the fact that Ryan Grubb and Scott Huff and that new coaching staff there tends or seems like they're going to favor guys that are athletic and can move, right, as opposed to the big maulers. Who are some guys that you think would be really good fits?
Well, obviously, Cooper Beebe gives you a little bit of the movement skills, although he's probably not as athletic as Javion Cohen out of Miami.
He's your number one guard, isn't he?
I love him, and I think he's a fantastic player. I love Cooper Beebe as well. I mean, you can't go wrong with a Kansas State offensive lineman, right? That's sight unseen right there. So Cooper Beebe or Javion Cohen, I'm good with. Both guys can get out there and move. Beebe is a little bit more athletic on the move, despite not being more athletic than Cohen. But I just like his movement skills. So those would be first-round options if I were Seattle, if they're taking a guard in the first. And listen, I have to disagree with him on one thing. Listen, if you're guard center guard is strong, you're playing great offense. If you have a quarterback that's worth his salt, he's going to step up in the pocket and be able to wiggle around, you know, adequate tackle play. But you can't get around bad guards in a guard play.
Yeah.
That spearheads a run game that helps protect you in pass pro. That needs to be – I hope teams will flip that focus and we need to find us a franchise guard, franchise center, as opposed to a franchise left tackle.
And I still do think that's the focus at the end of the day. The way I interpreted his comments weren't – people applied them globally. Like, guards shouldn't be drafted that high. Guards shouldn't be paid. I took it as there was a little bit of a tone in his voice to mean more of that he was thinking about some specific times that guys he wanted in the draft were taken before he wanted, you know, he expected them to be there, or guards that he might be interested in free agency were paid more by other teams than they were willing to pay. To me, that's the way I took those comments. So I think people have kind of misconstrued those. But that's another good example of you kind of bucking the consensus, you know, with Cohen, who's a former five-star guy and a big name early in his career that just really didn't seem to make that leap. A lot of the guard prospects that are projected to go in the first round are guys that have played mostly tackle. The big name locally is Troy Faletanu, UW. Some people have him in the top 15. Some people have him at a guard. There seemed to be at the beginning of the draft process an assumption he would move to guard because his body just kind of looks like a guard. But then he goes to the combine, and even though he's only 6'3", he measures 34 plus inch arms. And so, well, maybe he's still a tackle now. You've got him as a tackle, and thus you've got him down your list because it's such a strong group overall. What are your thoughts on his ability to slide inside if indeed that's what a team wanted him to do and play left guard?
He's my number one tackle. So
I'm sorry. I made that mistake. He is your number one tackle. I'm looking at my own notes and I saw a one and I thought there was a zero after it, but that zero was the O. So I have Troy Faletanu, number one OT.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's your number one guy. Okay.
Cause here's the thing. And I'm big on until you prove you can't do it, there's no reason to entertain you not doing it. So it's the same thing with what we see with, you know, smaller wide receivers playing on the outside. Until you show me you can't get off bump press, until you show me you can't bury your releases at the line of scrimmage, I have no reason to put you inside as a slot just because you're 5'9". Yeah. Like, nah, stay on the outside until you prove you can. Because sometimes you may have a big guy that can't do those things, and they work better inside as a bigger slot. So you move. So size never is a skill, in my opinion. And if he's out there dominating, and it's not like he's playing, you know, subpar edge rush talent. In the Pac-12 this year, he's seen a ton of terrific pass rushers. So we're talking about the UCLA kids. We talk about the Utah kids. We talk about Oregon State always has a good defensive front. They do a lot of different things to pressure you. So why wouldn't he stay at tackle if he's dominating out there? And we've seen that work in the league with the Chargers tackle, you know? And so at the end of the day, if you're doing it, you're doing it. So that's why he grayed out to me. Now, you're right. His body looks like a guard. But for me, it's just like, until you prove you can't block NFL level defensive ends, then let's just see we know we can slot you inside and perhaps, you know, you work at guard. But until that happens, until we have to, you know, make that decision, are you going to stay your butt out there at tackle?
You have two mantras. One you just mentioned, it's not size is not a skill. And your other one is it doesn't matter where you play, but how you play. Faletanu, a good example of that. Just 6'3", seems like their tackles to be taller, but he's got those long arms. It's funny. You just made me think of something else that I thought of from yesterday. I saw Matt Miller posted. He tweeted something about Michael Barrett, the linebacker out of Michigan, said that in particular, the game he watched against Alabama was the best game he'd seen any linebacker play all year. So I went and watched it. And my point isn't about Michael Barrett here. It's just that Michael Barrett's listed at 6 foot, 233 pounds. I turn on the tape and he looks like a tiny little Will linebacker running around. It's Faletanu, the same thing. He's 6'3", 315, 312 pounds, 34 inch arms. But you turn on the tape and he looks like a squatty little guard. Sometimes college uniforms make a guy look different. So it's how do you have to battle that sometimes? Do you have to, when you're watching a tape, kind of double check your work, go back to combine measurements? Is this guy really 6'2"? Is this guy really 6'1"?
It's funny. Here's my process on that. because I watch so many players, I kind of can, you know, get a good perspective on true size, right? Because if you watch a guy at a Division III program and he looks enlarged, right? And then you see him at the All-Star game circuit, or you get it, he gets lucky enough to go to the combine and gets measured. And he measures in at 6'1". You're like, damn, 6'1" on Division III field looks like that?
Yeah.
Like compared to 6'1" in the SEC looks 5'11"? Like, yeah. So you do it. Sometimes it does jump out at you. Like I'm watching John Hall at Northwood because, you know, he's listed as 6'4", right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's probably closer to 6'2".
Yeah.
But when you're 6'2" and a half, closer to 6'3", you're going to look 6'4" out there amongst a bevy of, you know, 6 foot players and 5'9", 5'10" corners. You're going to look larger. But yeah, and sometimes, and it was funny you say that about the uniforms. I find that when guys go to the pros, they look smaller in their uniforms than they did in college. They look massive in college, but then they get to the pros, they always look like they about 30 pounds lighter than what they were in college.
Yeah. And then the weight thing would seem to be more elusive than ever, because these prospects, and I can't wait to get your thoughts on this, they're so much more proactive now in either gaining or losing weight for the testing process to try and, you know, increase their profile. Another local kid, Braylon Trice, who was listed at 275 pounds during his career at UW, a guy who's 6'4", 6'5", and at that weight, well, you know, all these teams now are playing these hybrids, 3-4-4-3 kind of versatile schemes, and they want those bigger edges. And so he fits that profile. Then he shows up to the combine and he's 245. And when I saw that tweeted out, I thought, that's a typo. He's not 205. I got on a guy. I was like, he's not 245 pounds. And then 5 minutes later, there's Daniel Jeremiah saying that he cut to 245. How do you feel about that? And how does that affect, what's the challenge then of trying to project a guy when you don't know what weight he's going to play at?
Right, because now you look at the schools, like, was he really 275? Mm-hmm. We know it's always a 2-inch, 10-pound, you know, cheat on these college rosters. But maybe he was playing during the season at 255, and it was easy for him to cut the 10 pounds to come in at 245. So, because to drop 30 pounds in a month, that's not good either way, right?
Right.
And so you want to know what was his playing weight during the season. A lot of guys do play lighter anyway during the season. So I'm thinking he's probably more closer to 255 than he was at 275. And now you wonder, okay, if he came in at this, that's why you don't see a lot of guys run a workout at the combine that's doing the weight transfer type deal, because they probably have never run at this weight. So they don't want to run slow, and they probably haven't competed at this weight. So they don't want to look weak, you know, or, you know, or not as strong. So they don't do any of the drills. So if the tape tells you he's playing like someone that's 245, 255, there's your answer. If his game was predicated on anchoring and setting a physical edge and being powerful, and then he came in at 245, then you have to wonder, like, hey, man, are you good at playing the way you played on film at 245 as opposed to what you're listed at 275?
Yeah, we saw that here last year too with Mike Morris cut weight to go to the combine too. I think he tested it like 275, and then when the Seahawks drafted him, there was the famous video of them calling him to tell him they were picking him and basically telling him he could eat whatever he wants now because they want him playing inside. Before we get off of guards real quick, if indeed they go a different direction, because they might. John Schneider has been adamant the last couple of years that they go best player available and don't reach for need in the early rounds. So let's say they go with a different position group early. They don't have another pick until the late third round and then beyond. How about some sleeper guards, some guys later on, maybe late day two, early day three, that you think have rookie starter potential?
I like Dalton Tucker out of Marshall. I feel like he's a good one. Like, you talk about athleticism, he's someone that just gets out and he's clearing out space, man. Like, some guys get out there and just don't block nobody.
Yeah.
But he gets out there and he does a great job and just connecting consistently. I love his athleticism on the move. He's a real good one. Dominic Puny is another one out of Kansas, is a really good player. You know, I like his ability to get out and move and how physical he is. And C.J. Hansen of Holy Cross had a really good East-West Shrine Bowl, small school guy, very good offense, you know, where you're dealing with a mobile quarterback in Matthew Sluka, who's now transferred to UNLV. So they really ran the football, but he was also out there getting out on the move and doing a lot of great things, held his own at the Shrine Bowl as well. So I think those are some good options later in the draft.
Puny's an interesting name to bring up just because yesterday I had a little bit of a Twitter debate with somebody. I literally had just been watching combine highlights, just kind of going back over some offensive linemen, and saw Puny's 40. And it wasn't good, 5.35, I think 5.4, and was kind of a lumbering 40. And then moments later, somebody suggested to me that he'd be a good target. And I said, I don't think he moves well enough. Well, I jumped the gun because then I went back after the guy told me I was wrong and read some other scouting reports and watched some of his lateral testing. And he just doesn't run well straight ahead. But he moves pretty well. Yeah. Yeah. Let's move on to another position group that's got a lot of fans hoping that we address it in the draft. The Seahawks move on. They change out their entire linebacker room. Bobby Wagner leaves in free agency. Once again, goes and reunites with Dan Quinn in Washington. They lose Jordan Brooks in free agency. They turn around, they sign Terrell Dotson, Jerome Baker, but on 1 year deals. And so, you know, me personally, and I know I'm not alone, we got to get some guys in there on rookie deals, on 4 year contracts. We got to kind of be able to see the future of that linebacker position. What we know about Mike McDonald is he doesn't tend to look for traditional Mike and Will roles. He wants interchangeable guys, guys that can hit and cover. Who are your favorite linebackers in this group?
Jeremiah Trotter Jr. and Edgerrin Cooper. I think those dudes are just phenomenal. You know, Trotter is someone that has a little bit more coverage instincts than Cooper, but Cooper can get out there and run with you. But Trotter is someone that excels both in man and zone coverage. He can turn the ball over. He's good running chase backer. Cooper is someone that's explosive. He's another one that's a good running chase guy, but definitely can pressure you as well. And like I said, he can run with backs. He can run with tight ends. But in terms of zone, you know, dropping back and, you know, working through, you know, curl flat or hook curl, Trotter Jr. is probably a little bit more experienced in that regard. So those two just immediately jump out at me as guys that would be perfect fits.
And then there are two inside linebacker prospects that the we know the Seahawks are going to meet with as part of their top 30 visits that they're allowed. And one of them you have ranked as your number 7 inside linebacker, Tyrese Knight out of UTEP.
Yeah, big thumper. You know, another one, UTEP had a couple of defenders that just like, they just like lay the lumber. And these dudes are really good, fundamentally sound football players. And so he's another one that just kind of like fits the mold of being able to, you know, sift through what's going on. And then just once he sees it, he's triggering downhill and attacking. I would also look at Kalen DeLoach of Florida State, another one that would be technically undersized. But, man, he's always around the football. He's playing like he's 240 pounds as a thumper. Good football player, good athlete, helps spearheaded. A really good defense at Florida State. And John Trey Hunter of Georgia State, you know, when I was down at the Senior Bowl, I'm watching him work out in one-on-ones. I'm like, yo, who's the Georgia State safety? You know, because, again, I'm still getting introduced to the prospects on these All-Star game trips. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh, no, that's a linebacker. Like, wow, he's lean. He's athletic. He's, you know, working these guys and on the line of scrimmage. He's able to run downfield and make plays. And then when I finally got to go grade his film, he's another one that could play any one of the backer positions, can get out there as a former strong safety and cover tight ends. He can pressure. He can turn the ball over. He's another one that's a really good all-around football player at 6'2", 36. So he carries it well and looks the part, plays the part, and played in a very good football conference, the Sun Belt Conference.
I want to step away from Seahawk needs specifically to finish up, because I just want to give you a chance and give the viewers a chance to kind of get some little nuggets from you. So who's a guy that you love that you think, regardless of position or regardless of where he's projected, that you love, that you think is being overlooked, that isn't being rated high enough?
Leandre Andrus from Mars Hill, an offensive lineman. No one's talking about this cat. He's 6'2", 315. Saw him at the FCS Bowl, and he really stood out as a pass protector. And what initially caught my eye was that at the All-Star game, he's wearing 98. I'm like, why is he wearing 98? Is it a defensive tackle converting to, you know, offensive line? But you go and watch his film. He was a Jacobs Blocking Award winner, which is the top offensive lineman award given in the state of South Carolina. So he won it for the Division II prospects at Mars Hill. And this dude was just mowing guys down on film. Athletic as all get out because he's playing right tackle. But obviously he'll kick down inside as a guard. But watching him at the FCS Bowl against FCS talent, and, you know, he's doing his thing and playing really well. Looks the part athletically, has a really good build, is a legit 6'2", 315. And so he's someone nobody's talking about. And I've been talking about these receivers from Division II, Division III all throughout the whole once I was finished grading guys, is, you know, Kyle Sheets of Slippery Rock, 6'2", 222. Runs like 4.4, 4.5, can get vertical down the field, is a big playmaker for Slippery Rock. John Giles of West Florida, 6'2", 202, can fly, can jump out the gym. And those two Division III guys, Cole Burgess of Cortland and also D'Angelo Hardy of North Central, they were going toe-to-toe in the Division III championship game. You know, this guy makes a big play. Here comes the other one making a big play. Burgess is a lot faster, but Hardy just plays a pro game. So both guys are excellent receiver prospects. Now you're starting to see a lot more people talk about Cole Burgess, but him and Hardy are really good receivers.
And then who's a guy that everyone says is going to go high or go early that you just think they're missing on?
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Probably J.J. McCarthy. And it's no fault of his own because he didn't ask for, you know, to be talked about as a top five pick. When I think of, again, maybe my perception or perspective is skewed based off seeing a lot of football, right, over the years. Because when I think top five pick, I always use the 1989 draft as the example. That's the blueprint. You're talking about Troy Aikman, Barry Sanders, Derek Thomas, Deion Sanders. Like, listen,
who?
If you're not that, then I'm not – you better – when you say top five – that's what top five talent is, right? When you think top five of the first round, I'm not taking someone that's in the first round that high that could be Brock Purdy, right? Not saying Brock Purdy is a bad player, but you're not taking Brock Purdy in the top five, you know, unless you're bringing all those top five talents around Brock Purdy with you in the top five. So if you can't be a player that teams can win because of, then that pushes you down into the later first round, second round type area, which is fine. There's no knocking your skill set. But, man, when you say top five, top 10 pick, and if you're not measuring up to the 1989 draft, then I'm not taking that high.
How did we get to this point where it's, you know, the old definition of insanity is you continue the same action over and over again and get the same results, right? Consistently, year after year. Now more than ever, with the rookie contracts being what they are, because teams can dispose of these guys without as much pain early in their career. But year after year, teams overvalue quarterbacks and they're trying to find the next Pat Mahomes, the next Joe Burrow, the next Josh Allen, et cetera. And they miss, and yet they continue to take these guys high in the draft, and not just take them high in the draft, but trade mass assets to move up and take these guys. Do you see that ever changing? What's that going to take, and why do teams continue to take that approach?
We have to get back to the football. You know, when we were all about the football and not the numbers, not the spreadsheets, not the, you know, the draft capital and the, you know, resetting the contract. When we were just about taking good football players, that's what we have to get back to, right? If you don't think this guy is a difference maker, then don't take him in the first round. First round is supposed to be for impact starters now. You know, everyone else, you have a little bit of wiggle room. But first round, especially top 10 picks, you better be a difference maker. And, you know, that's why if I was Chicago, I wouldn't have moved off of Justin Fields. I would have taken two top 10 talents as opposed to, you know, just resetting quarterback. You know, because now you set the table for the new guy you're going to draft when you already had a good guy in place that you didn't have to go rush to go pay yet. And you could have added two more elite talents at other positions. So I just feel like we got to get back to the football. Because when you're in week nine watching, you know, your favorite team or whatnot, no one's caring about draft capital or contracts. Or you just want to know if this dude is out there is good. And the best way to do that is just, you know, keep it about football and not about anything else. And once we get back to that, I think we'll be fine.
Good stuff. That is Emery Hunt, publisher of the Football Game Plan Draft Guide, CBS Sports. You can follow him on Twitter. I will put all those links in the description for this video so you can order his draft guide. It's very affordable. It is definitely worth the read. Emery, thanks for taking time out of your day.
Appreciate you, man. Thanks for having me on.
F-Ball Game Plan. F-Ball Game Plan is Emery's Twitter handle. Definitely follow him there. And, man, I can't encourage you strongly enough to buy the draft guide, because if you want to be prepared for anything, like he kept bringing up John Hall, right? The undrafted wide receiver from last year. If you want to be prepared for any curveball the Seahawks might throw at you, his is the game, the draft guide to have, because you're just not going to find these names in a lot of the other ones out there. So thanks again to Emery for coming on. He's a busy, busy man this time of year. What are your thoughts? Who are some of your favorite under-the-radar prospects that nobody's talking about that you'd love to see on the Seahawks? Let me know in the comments below. Until then, follow me on Twitter at Seahawks Forever. And we'll see you tomorrow with Michael Thompson and I. Michael and I have done a lot of mock drafts together. We've probably shared privately at least 200 of them over the last calendar year, I would say, or maybe going back to January of last year, kind of two draft seasons ago. So tune in for that. Until then, forever and always, go Hawks. Thanks for watching.